an interesting one to think about what to speak about today. It's the start of the year, and you know the sort of origin of New Year's resolutions is, I think it was a Babylonian thing, that they believed that, you know, whatever you thought or hoped for or longed for on the first day of the year would happen. It would be the case throughout the year. And so that's the sort of the origin of New Year's resolutions. So there is something about this day, isn't there? Something about what we set our mind and our heart to on this day that we want to see happening in the days, the weeks and the months ahead. So this passage came to me as I was thinking about today in December, as a sort of in the run-up to Christmas. I was thinking, okay, Lord, what do you want me to talk about? What do you want us to reflect on and think about on this first day of the year? And it's a challenging passage that came to mind, one that isn't wholly positive, and one that's going to take just a little bit of work to just get our heads around a little bit and apply to our kind of lives and life together as a church. So it's in Mark 8, verses 11 to 21. Mark 8, 11 to 21. Before I read it, what we need to do is flick through the preceding chapters. And I just want to highlight the fact as we go into this passage that what we see in preceding chapters is a number of amazing miracles. Yeah? Jesus does a number of amazing things in the preceding chapters. So he calms the storm. So there's healing. A demon-possessed man is released. He feeds the 5,000. He walks on water. He sees people healed. And then he feeds the 4,000. So I just say that going into this passage because it's important. So, starting at verse 11, it says, "The Pharisees came and began to question Jesus to test him. They asked him for a sign from heaven." They asked him for a sign from heaven, yet in the preceding chapters, we have sign from heaven after sign from heaven after sign from heaven. That's why we need to look back as we read this passage. "He sighed deeply." That's what it says. "He sighed deeply and said, 'Why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly I tell you, no sign will be given to it.'" They had a sign, didn't they? They had sign after sign after sign, but they chose not to see it. So Jesus sighed deeply. "Why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly I tell you, no sign will be given." Then he left them. He said, it's like he just went. Got back into the boat and crossed over to the other side. The disciples had forgotten to bring bread, except for one loaf they had with them in the boat. "Be careful," Jesus warned them. "Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod." They discussed with one another and said, "It's because we have no bread." Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and have ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember when you broke the 5 loaves and for the 5,000, how many baskets of pieces did you pick up?" 12, they replied. "And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" They answered, 7. And he said to them, "Do you still not understand?" Got to do a bit of work on this one, haven't we? Sometimes, words are not needed to indicate how we feel. I'm one of those people who, sometimes, if you ask my wife, it's written all over my face. Jesus doesn't actually say any words here. But they know exactly how he feels, and we know how he feels, because he sighs deeply. A deep sigh in response to the Pharisees' questioning. The word in its original language, to draw up deep sighs from the bottom of the breast, to sigh deeply. I don't think this would have been quiet. I think this would have been a loud, maybe even a little if it was in a modern context, come on. I think it was a sigh born out of holy frustration, holy disapproval, holy irritation. Jesus let out a deep sigh. He was bothered and he was grieved by what was coming at him. It's this I want to think about today. There are two areas that are highlighted. I think there's that the first is his interaction with the Pharisees, and the second is his interaction with the disciples. And I think he was sighing about both of these. So the first interaction, those first few verses, were with the Pharisees. Who were these guys? Well, they were the self-appointed guardians of Israel. They were like the holiness police. They were there to try and tell people what to do. No, they were misguided in their understanding of holiness, but they claimed to love God. But actually, these are people who put on and policed layer after layer after layer of rules and regulations and law about how they were to love God. Jesus challenged this repeatedly in his ministry, didn't he? So though he starts, if you go on to the following chapters in Mark, he starts his journey to the cross. He turns his face to the cross. Actually, in chapter 3, the Pharisees were starting the plotting to kill him. Why? Because he broke their rules. He rebuked them publicly. He didn't take what they were doing or saying. Jesus was having none of their imposed legalistic lists of do's and don'ts in order to be acceptable to God. So these guys came to Jesus and they demanded a sign, even though, as I've said already, the previous chapters are packed full of signs and wonders, genuine examples of the kingdom of God breaking into the physical realm. The reality of those people is, and the question was, they weren't actually looking for a sign. They didn't want to hear from heaven. They didn't want to be drawn into this wonder and amazement of what this new chapter in their kind of history was about. They simply wanted to discredit Jesus and to catch him out. It wasn't the first time, was it? You go back to chapter 3, Mark 3, another time it says, Jesus went into the synagogue and there was a man with a shriveled hand who was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse him. So they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, stand up in front of everyone. And Jesus asked them, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they remained silent. He looked around. This is strong. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. It's harsh, isn't it? It's harsh. And he said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how that they might kill Jesus. Even there, Pharisees and Herod plotting together. Do you know what Jesus' frustration was here? And maybe, and no doubt in chapter 8, in his frustration with the Pharisees then too, is that there were man-made rules and religious patterns that were being imposed at the expense of genuine care for the lost. Patterns and religious rules at the expense of the lost and the coming of the kingdom. Just contrast this with this deep response that we read about in Matthew 9. I love this passage. It says, Jesus went through the towns and the villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, it says he had compassion on them. I'm going to pick on Pete now. What's the Greek? That's it. Did you get that? Splankdizomai. Greek for a deep compassion. This wasn't a, oh. This was a, oh. A depth, heartfelt cry for the lost before him. The Pharisees had hardened their hearts towards Jesus, and they had hardened their hearts towards the world around them. They were not willing to have their rules and routines messed up by Jesus turning up. God was moving right before their eyes. right before their eyes. Miracles, signs, wonders, teaching, loving. Yet they were more concerned about religious patterns being broken. Do you know, I think they were more concerned about their own position being put into question. While Jesus is breaking his heart over a broken world, longing to see it changed and transformed. I just find myself asking this question as we come into this new year. How messy are we willing for it to get? For the sake of this world. How much are we willing to kind of put aside maybe, I don't know, historical patterns or ways? How much are we willing to say, this is about our mission to the lost of this world, before maybe my own particular preferences or patterns? Are we willing to discern when that religious, that Pharisaical spirit starts whispering in our ear? Oh, I don't like that very much. Please, I'm not saying this in any kind of condemning way. I'm saying it because I believe God has given me this passage to share. And it's just the questions I feel we need to ask as we seek to be the church God has called and created us to be, yeah? Is that okay? But there is this religious spirit. And I believe this religious spirit has hindered and held back the church. And we need to be free from it. Because Jesus deeply sighed over its influence. Does that make sense? Doesn't mean we don't talk about holiness. Doesn't mean that we don't seek it in our own lives or encourage it in the lives of others. But I believe we've got to do it in the way that God does it. Listen to this from Ezekiel 36. I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And this is the bit. I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. I'll put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. This is not about being bullied and manipulated from the outside. It's about living and loving and moving from that which is within, yeah? It's about living for God, about loving the world. It's about instinctively doing these things out of the Holy Spirit's presence within us. So that's the Pharisees. But then the second part of this passage is about the disciples. You know, Jesus left that difficult, intense interaction with the Pharisees. He kind of walked away and got into a boat. And it seems, as I said, the sigh seems to continue. I'm going to ask a question. Have you ever had a conversation where you're talking at completely cross purposes with someone? You think you're talking about something and they're talking about something completely different. Okay, I've got a little clip of where this happens, okay?